Welcome to the Serial Serial, the AV Club's podcast about a podcast. Each week, a few Onion Egg staffers will be talking about an episode of S-Town, the new podcast from the teams behind Serial and This American Life. I'm AV Club Senior Editor Mara Eakin, joined this week by Onion Inc. Editorial Director Josh Modell and Onion Inc. Director of Photography Carl Blomberg. Hello, guys.
Oh, hello. Sorry, Carl and I were just looking at each other.
Hello. Hello.
I was bathing in Carl's title.
You guys, this week we are tackling the fifth episode of S-Town, which Josh, right before we started taping, you called the most boring episode of S-Town.
Well, I don't know if there are any really boring episodes of S-Town, but like, I think it's interesting that they dropped, I'm sorry for saying dropped, all the episodes at once. I think if they weren't planning on dropping all the episodes at once, they may have edited this one a little differently. Because it is sort of a bridge episode where not all that much happens. So
there's,
I guess, we learn a little bit.
There's a lot of insinuation in it with no payoff.
Yeah. And that's the end of this episode of the Serial. No. I think every episode is good. I think you learn a few things, but you don't... There's no real revelations in episode 5, I didn't think.
Carl?
I think it might suffer from a lack of John. I think it's not until, like, there's 15 minutes left in the episode where you hear John's voice, and his voice goes a long way towards kind of keeping the momentum going, and this one relies on Rita and Tyler and people who might, you know, they're not as compelling of an interview as John is.
I don't know. I think Rita is kind of compelling in the, and Tyler, in that they're both, well, in this episode, you hear Rita wants to cut John's nipples off and Tyler wants to cut that guy's fingers off that stole his grandpa's guns.
Well, I didn't even put those things together. That's totally true. They're both crazy.
They're the
Frontier
same.
Frontier justice.
Yeah. Or I forget what I have it in my notes, but I'll look in a minute. Tyler's likes the court of whoop ass or something. I can't remember what it is. I got to look it up. But I think it's sort of, the episode sort of serves to flip what we think about both of those people. Like, we've been conditioned to think, like, Tyler's John's really good friend, and he wants to take care of Mama. And
deserves that money. He just, you know, all that stuff.
And in this episode, he wants to cut somebody's fingers off, and he's clearly a car thief because he thinks he deserves it. And it turns out that Mama is actually probably better off with Rita, and Rita maybe actually cares.
Yeah. First of all, I read the Guardian. No, it was the Daily Mail last week. I read it last week. Had an article that said that, you know, Rita and Mary Grace and Rita and Charlie and Tyler and what they all think of each other still, pictures of them. Rita has pink hair and her name is spelled R-E-T-A, which I thought was interesting. Hmm. So there you go. Rita and Charlie.
Now I can think all different things about
and
her.
And they still think that Tyler is trash.
Well, I mean, everybody's trash. Like, aren't they? Are they sort of just like, I think that's what we learned. Like, she wants to cut his nipples off to get the nipple rings. And then her excuse is like, oh, I kind of wanted to like have something of his. Like, you wanted his nipple rings that you had to cut his nipples off to get?
Yeah. Like, it was close to him.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time kind of building some understanding of Rita and some empathy of what she's going through. Mm-hmm. And then they drop the nipple part on you.
Yeah. And also, then, go ahead.
Also, she, like, had full access to his house. Like, she could have gone in there and taken anything. Like, take his, you know, his pillow or something, if you really want something, I don't know, close to him.
His
take
nasty
anything.
Old shoes.
Yeah, those handkerchiefs he blows his nose in.
Ugh, so gross.
Just a regular ring. Doesn't have to be a nipple ring. I'm sure he has some other rings in there.
I think it also, I guess, in a smaller way, pointed to the idea that both Tyler and Rita wanted the gold, whatever the gold was. Like, she mentions it. First, she's like, oh, I want to take care of Mama. I don't care. Like, what? Everything's fine. And then she's like, but I went looking for that gold. I called the mint. I did this and that. And then, you know, Tyler, I don't know if Tyler's looking for the gold, but he wants the bus that's on the property and the other stuff. They both want monetary gain from John B. McLemore's death.
Mm-hmm. They want what's theirs. I think they also don't want to lose anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think Rita, the reason they probably sold that property so fast is that Rita needed to pay for Mary Grace's life. I mean, if there's only $98 in a bank account, was she just all of a sudden responsible for this older woman's care? And Tyler, too, like, he had all these tools and stuff on the property, and then, nope, not anymore. You don't have access to them. So, I mean, you don't want to lose money, I guess, on the whole proposition.
sort of a shitty time for everybody in Shittown, if you think about it, except for whoever walked away with the gold bars that were in the freezer.
The cops.
Do we know about that yet? Or is that not until episode 7?
I think that's episode 7.
Okay. Sorry, people in advance.
Yeah,
there might have been gold bars in the freezer, but nobody knows.
Okay, so when episode 5 kicks off, Tyler is in the hot seat. He has 9 felony charges against him, all of which seem fairly legit, like seems like he did them. Carl, what do you think about his acting out, and why can't Tyler stay out of trouble?
Well, I think Tyler has some more than legitimate reasons for acting out. They go into his backstory a little bit. He seems to not have had a kind of fair shake at everything. He was born in this house where his dad abused him. They didn't have very much money. I think he moved out and kind of crammed into his grandma's place with his brothers and sisters. He's had a shitty life in Shittown. And I think part of the whole exercise of listening to this podcast is to, you know, empathize with someone like him who has had that sort of upbringing and kind of analyze his actions in that context when it comes to John. So I think that he makes it tough to sort of root for him, but at the same time, you know, I didn't grow up like that. I don't know what he went through and kind of what he's going through with his just kind of seeming inability to stay out of trouble despite John's best efforts.
It's funny that John gets so upset too, because it's the same, in the same vein of things that people get upset with John for. Do you know what I mean? Like, John's complaining. John, get out of town, John, if you're so upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
Make yourself a better life. Same thing with Tyler, but in a different situation.
Yeah, but John's not getting in trouble like Tyler does with the law.
He'd never seen the inside of a jail until Tyler.
No, and then I think John also seems like he genuinely cares about the people close to him, like Tyler. Brian kind of talked about how John would be there for Tyler and help him through his legal troubles and kind of hold his hand through all these things. And I think John's in a position of having more control over his life than Tyler is, and he's trying to give Tyler some of that control.
We hear a little bit in this episode, Josh, about Tyler's sort of like fuck it mentality, where he's like, I'm going to get mine, basically, the guy that came and stole the guns. What do you think of that?
I looked up my note. He called it the whoop-ass now solution.
Okay, thank you.
That's very important. We should probably get some t-shirts made with that on it. Sorry, what was the question?
I don't know. What do you think of that? Like, is he, you know, is he justified in, well, first of all, would you cut that guy's fingers off? Is he justified in that? That's a little eye for an eye justice. And second of all, I mean, I guess I can see how it develops. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think you're very right in that respect, Carl, where this is about empathizing. I don't know people from small town Alabama. This is about empathizing with those lives and learning more about those people.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to, I can't remember if it was episode one or two that we were talking about, like where they see the woman with no pants and they're like, something got her there. It's like, well, this is about what got Tyler where Tyler is. You know, he doesn't think twice about, well, I guess he sort of thinks twice about cutting somebody's fingers off, but like, it's just how he's kind of been raised. And I think that's, you know, if there's something interesting to be taken away from this not necessarily all that interesting episode, it's his backstory and, you know, sort of turning the spotlight on his the bad parts of his character. Because all we've heard from him about him up until this point is that, you know, he was John's good friend and they took care of each other. And like, oh, every time I saw him, every time we left each other, I said, oh, I love you, man. I love you too. But like, I'm not going to have sex with you or whatever it was. They're a little fun hashtag no homo thing that they would do with each other. And so I think this is sort of interesting to shine a light on, like, well, he's really not that great a guy, but maybe that's Shittown's fault and maybe it's not.
But he has what sounds like a great house that he's working on.
Yeah, he's building something pretty crazy.
I know, right? Like all these different kinds of woods and vines and stuff worked into it, and a horse trough. Yeah. It's going to be, I'd like to see infinite photos, please.
Yeah,
for sure.
Finally, like a curbed page for Tyler's house in Woodstock.
And presumably, like, he got some of the fire in his belly to do that from John McLemore, who took care of his weird property and was interested in things being, you know, out of the ordinary and kind of beautiful.
And the concept that you can build or do anything that you want with the things that you have, maybe, you know, being very resourceful.
It sounds like something, John would smile upon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wonder if he got that fire under his ass to do it because he's like, I got to get this trailer locked in before it gets taken away. Yeah, right.
Already
I
built some the house shit with
built
it.
Around it. Sorry, yeah. Guys.
I mean, there's like, we laugh, but it's a fucking desperate life that he's living, you know? And I think that's a key thing of John B. McLemore, who like the people that he takes under his wing are these desperate people. And the people that he has total disdain for are the people that have enough money and that are comfortable. Like, oh, the guys that run the lumber company, come down here. Like this rich kid got away with killing this other kid. Like, that's where this whole thing starts. And the people that he takes under his wing are the people that are poor and abused. And you know, we get into the thing later in the episode where we meet Michael Fuller, who's another guy that he kind of took under his wing. Mm-hmm. And it's like the same thing. The guy was like fucking up in life and McLemore was there to try and kind of help him out.
Well, Josh, let's talk about that when we come back from the break. You are listening to The Serial Serial. We're back. Josh, you mentioned Michael Fuller right before the break. What the heck did you think about him?
Well, I don't know that we get to know all that much about him. I think we learn a little bit more about John B. McLemore, who has this fantastic idea of what a terrible life his former, project.
He pays $1,800 for an apartment with no bathroom, and he lives with an Argentinian woman who imports high-powered weed.
Yeah, but it turns out he's successful. He's married. He has a family. So John B. McLemore clearly doesn't want the people who have left his charge to kind of succeed, I think. Mm-hmm. But that said, Michael Fuller has really nice things to say about McLemore. He says he's happy. He understands that he's out to help people. Mm-hmm. Also, I guess we get, it's not a revelation, I guess, but it's like, oh, he's gay. Like, okay, I guess we had hints at that. And then goes into his sort of speculation about, even though he has never heard the name Tyler, he just assumes that, you know, McLemore was in love with a man again and got jilted, and that led to his suicide.
Do you think he was in love with Michael Fuller, Carl?
Well, because episode 6 hasn't happened yet in the world we're currently living in. It's hard to say because I don't think John's in love with Tyler necessarily.
No.
I think
he's just in love with the concept of like having someone around constantly.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he clearly knows bounds, like his relationships have bounds. And I think with Michael Fuller, I think this is sort of the first real sense of validation that we get of John. Like people have nice things to say about him and
great at clocks.
Yeah. But as far as like his effect on people, like it seems like he did turn around the life of Michael Fuller, have a big hand in that. And it's, you know, he's not kind of totally full of shit with having relationships with people. And he can do good. I think that's what Michael Fuller showed us.
Yeah. And maybe that's the only one. I mean, it's hard to say. Did he have a positive effect on Tyler and his brother? Clearly, another thing I wanted to mention from this episode is like, you know, he had sort of posited himself as the caretaker of his mother, and he did such a great job with her. And then we learn later, like, he was not really taking very good care of his mother. And when his mother went to live with Rita and Charlie, I think his name is, she's immediately gaining weight, and she's more lucid, and she's got a TV to watch, which is, you know, she's 88. You want her to give the lady a TV, you know?
Yeah, send her to Gatlinburg on the boat or whatever it is. Again, this is just Rita's word, and so who really knows if she's really getting 18 pounds in 3 months, but I believe her.
Yeah,
it sounds right.
You know, she sounds, I'll let the nipple comment make me believe everything she says, because if she's willing to say off his damn nipples, which is what she said, that was my note, and it's,
no, she said,
stretched
cut his
out.
Nipple off, he's dead. Cut his nipples off, he's dead.
Right. Cut his nipples off, he's dead. There was like a lot of syllables in dead. So I tend to believe that is.
Yeah, she's
true.
Probably not lying about Mary Grace. And she said that she was willing to give Mary Grace up. Like,
yeah.
She basically said, no, like, I didn't need to take her. Like, if she wanted to go with Tyler, she'd go with Tyler. She's an 88-year-old woman. Like, she can do what she wants.
Yeah. And then as soon as she got the sense from Tyler that Tyler was interested in money and not much else, that's when she started keeping her notebook and kind of turning on him. So they both thought they were doing the right thing, and they both wanted whatever money was there, I think.
It's
and those
speak,
don't have to be mutually
to
exclusive.
Speak ill of the dead or whatever related to John B. McLemore, but it seems like he was keeping her in the life, I suppose, that he wanted to live, or the life that he wouldn't have minded living. Like, I don't need a TV. We can just have Little Caesar's pizza 3 times a week or whatever. And
he's so, like, you know, a really smart, compassionate guy, but also so clearly deeply miserable that he wasn't really thinking about his mom, I don't think. And, you know, just talking constantly about wanting to kill himself. Like, you're not in a good mental place to take care of your elderly mother. If even if you seem like a really nice guy and you can hold these long conversations with people, like, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to make right decisions all the time.
I mean, he did have, like, giant brass nipple rings that Rita wanted to give to his mom, so I thought that was really sentimental.
Those will end up on eBay at some point when somebody digs them up and, like, I got John B. McLemore's nipple rings. Sorry, that just took a weird turn.
They bury some, this is, if you want to take it an even weirder turn.
Oh, good.
Some people get buried with, like, all their jewelry and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, so that's, I mean, it made sense to me. I don't know.
Yeah. I looked up a picture of them and their nipple rings are
They're pretty big.
It'd be tough to get them off there.
Oh, there's pictures of his nipple rings?
Yeah, and pictures,
like,
of nipple rings.
Can you see his tattoos? I don't even know what McLemore looks like.
You got to look up some tattoo pics, because the one he had on his back, which they'll talk about in episode 7, of, like, this, like, the whip around his neck and all the scars is really bad.
Oh, it's crazy. Right after we finish taping, I'm going to go look up some pictures. I don't know why I haven't. I was definitely curious about what everybody looked like.
Yeah, he has pretty big nipples, too.
Oh, good to know. So maybe it was tough to cut him off. Maybe that was the problem.
I side with The Undertaker.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah,
always.
Always dig around in there and, like, it's gross.
Yeah, you know, you'd probably get in trouble for mutilating a corpse, wouldn't you? I mean, you can't just cut his nipples off.
There's respect for the dead.
Right?
You know.
Cut his nipples off. He's dead. I'm going to make that my ringtone.
One last thing, I guess, is, you know, they talk a little bit, or more than you'd like, I guess, in this episode about the Woodstock police and whether or not they're on the up and up. What'd you guys think of that section? And I mean, it was interesting to me, sort of the ethics of small town justice. Like, there's only, I don't know what they say, like 900 people in that town or whatever. Right. And so there's four cops. And of course, they know everybody. Yeah. Like,
yeah, it didn't seem like the big police, you know, grand conspiracy that John initially painted when the series started. And, like, you know, I understand where Rita's coming from, and she thinks that the trailer and the trucks, they don't belong to
Tyler,
but he has proofs of sale, and if he has those, you know, could he be
as
a criminal?
As much as, like, anybody can. It's not like he went to, like, a dealership and bought them and there's records.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And, like, this guy, Jerry Lightsey, it's a small town. The policeman, Jerry Lightsey, he comes over and he sees the trailer and he doesn't really care. I think it's just kind of complicated and not a conspiracy. I think Jerry Lightsey just wants to retire and he's kind of buddies with Tyler. And he's like, okay, I guess you have a proof of sale. I'm sure John maybe told you a while ago that, hey, this trailer is yours if I ever go. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Jerry doesn't care. Fuck up their lives.
Yeah, Jerry's got the gold now anyway, so he doesn't care. I'll just take it with me.
Do you think the cops stole the gold, Josh?
I think if there was gold there, which I kind of do think there was, then the cops stole it.
I guess it's possible. Those thieving cops.
I mean, small town cops, like, and everybody's poor in town, including the cops.
How would they have known to go in his freezer? I mean, I guess they do kind of say in episode 7, though, that that is, like, a common place for people to hide things.
They mentioned it in episode, we're jumping ahead, but, like, they totally gloss it over in episode 7. Maybe you'll have me back for episode 7. But the woman from the court,
Faye Gamble
says, later admits that she was on the phone with the police and she's told them that the gold was in the freezer. And that's the last she heard of anything about the gold.
Mm-hmm.
Did John tell her? I forget if she said that John told
her.
While he was like one of the few people.
Swallowing,
so
was a cyanide, I think, told her.
Yeah.
Like, to use the money to euthanize the dogs or whatever. No, that was in his will. I can't remember.
That's a conversation for another day.
Another uplifting conversation
that's right.
to have.
And then I guess they tease episode 6 a little bit in this one, which is a very interesting episode that you'll be talking about.
Yeah,
next.
The concept of whether, you know, John had love in his life.
Mm-hmm. Or any sort of long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm. And indeed he did, but we'll find out all about that in episode 6. Carl, Josh, thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
You get everything out you want to get out? Yeah.
Yeah.
You
I guess we
points?
Have to. We're out of time. So, yes.
It's all out.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to The Serial Serial. I'm your host, Mara Eakin, and I've been joined by Carl Blomberg and Josh Monell. This program was produced by Stephen Holliger and by our executive director of audio, Mandana Mofidi. Our theme song is by The Hood Internet, and this episode was mixed by Jamie Colazzo. If you have a question you want to send us, you can email it to serialserial@avclub.com or post a tweet using the hashtag #SerialSerial. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Panoply, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever else you get your podcasts. We will see you all next week for episode 6, the romantic episode.